love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
Intro wise, you got something?
I don't. I don't even know the lyrics.
Do you know the lyrics to the theme song? Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, I wake up in the morning and
I know. Okay, right on.
It's all right because I'm saved by the bell. That's all I know.
That's all you need to know, technically. Well, let's see if I know it. When I wake up in the morning and I'm running on the phone and I think I'll ever make it on time. Bam, bam. Gotta pat myself a chest and know I get a rest. If I talk it over, it'll be all right.
For you.
That's as much as I can get.
I literally only know when I wake up in the morning. Nah, nah, and there's everything else for me just humming. Nah,
everything
nah,
else
nah,
is
nah,
blah, blah, blah,
nah,
blah, blah,
nah,
blah. Yeah. We're both in front of computers. We could easily look up the lyrics.
But
this
I won't.
Is liter- this is honest. Yeah, this
yes,
is honest
this is,
from our memories.
I mean, yeah. Because even... So I'm just going to say right off the bat, like, even the new one has, like, the same lyrics, but... It's,
yes.
I don't know who's singing it, but I hate it. I hate it.
It's awful.
It's the worst.
It's
it
cringeworthy.
If
which
you
is,
have, ma- yeah.
which is that how we feel about the new Saved by the Bell? Maybe.
No, absolutely not. And I'm saying
the rest of the episode.
Yeah, this is the beginning of the episode. Let's get right into it. We're talking Saved by the Bell today. A lot of millennials' after school show that you guys all probably watched growing up. You know, maybe we didn't love it, but we were definitely watching it because our options were limited, unlike kids today.
Seriously.
So.
That's true. Yeah.
Let's get right into it.
I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About.
Unoriginality.
Okay, we had some technical issues there, but here we are.
We're back. Yeah.
I hope that opening sounds as good as we hope it did.
It's just going to sound like we're drunk, you know?
Maybe. Well, speaking of that, actually, this past weekend was my significant other's birthday, and we had some people over, and they just left all of their alcohol here. So I am sipping on a beer because
I'm
working home.
Ew, you're sipping on a Bud Light.
Not?
Let's not call that a beer.
I mean, it's practically water, so I feel, you know, okay about...
You're more like hydrating bodies. Than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't give me hangovers. It doesn't make me feel bloated. I'll take it. It's trash, but I'll take it. But yeah, so I needed this too because, you know, this week we're covering Saved by the Bell and you kind of need something like alcohol to get you through that, so... Oh my God, Rolando's texting.
I am. I'm trying to find the Instagram message that was sent to us.
Oh, we have a message.
Yes, because why do you think we did Saved by the Bell?
Well, I kind of know one reason we did Saved by the Bell, but we have a second reason too.
And they both worked out wonderfully. So hang on, let me find that message.
Yeah. Well, so I'll tell you the first reason is that we really thought Godzilla vs. Kong was going to come out this weekend, and then when we went to HBO Max, we saw that it's actually coming out March 31st. Which for us is tomorrow. So we were like, oh my God, we always drop our episodes on Thursday. What are we going to do on time? And we were like looking like what new remakes, reboots, revivals. We always try and be on top of them. We came up short, but then we got a little message that was a suggestion from a listener. And
I have it here. Okay. And the message is from a Freddy. And he says, hey guys, why haven't you done Saved by the Bell? You did Punky. Show Zach Morris some love, LOL. I want to see what y'all think of the new one. And to that, I say great timing because we needed to fill up this week with new content. And Saved by the Bell it is. I'm starting to think that Freddy, though, is a plant from Peacock who was just like, oh my God, they're talking about one of our shows. Please cover another one.
Yeah, seriously. I actually think I heard of some guy, Freddy from Peacock. So
yeah,
I
so you know what? Peacock, we're on to you. And yeah. We'll do all your shows if you give us money. So
yeah, you just got to be upfront. We'll do it. So.
Yes, you can email us. And that's the same goes to our listeners here. Email us or slide into our DMs. But, you know, if you pitch an episode, we just might do it. And this week it worked out for us. So
yes, for sure.
yeah, email us. Our email is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. And our social media handles are Remakes Reboots Revivals on both Facebook and Instagram. So check us out.
Yeah. And you are definitely being heard. So please continue to reach out to us.
Yeah. So thank you, Freddie. So this one is for you.
Yes. Aw. We'll write it in the episode. Save the bell for Freddie. So like you said, this is pretty much, you know, if you are a millennial or you identify as millennial, you most likely watched Saved by the Bell at some point in your youth.
Yes.
You said after school, and for some reason I remember it being on early in the morning. Like, I remember watching them before I went to school.
Oh, I remember Saved by the Bell distinctly after school.
I do remember, I remember both, right? And I remember different versions of Saved by the Bell. So it's because Saved by the Bell was so popular. Yeah.
Are we talking about the college
I'm not
going to
jump into that. Yes, that's one of them. Not
I remember that. That was definitely after school.
That was, yeah. These were like, I remember this. I watched a lot of Family Matters. I kind of watched Full House and stuff. You know, these were like the shows that, those kind of sitcoms that I remember growing up on.
You watched them when they were syndicated though, right? Not
syndicated, yes.
Yeah, because I wasn't watching them week by I guess maybe I did start Family Matters because I was part of the TJF lineup. But I started Family Matters when it was syndicated. And
yeah, me too.
I think, so that's the thing. I don't know. I don't really know the history of Saved by the Bell. So this is where you're going to come in as our saving grace here.
Yeah, well, it's not that interesting. But, you know, it's actually surprising how successful this show was. And
it is not surprising.
It, for me, at least, because, you know, I was one of those people who watched it and then I grew up and I kind of forgot about it. And it was only into like recent years that I kind of rediscovered it, mainly because of that brilliant YouTube show, Zach Morris is Trash.
Oh, it's so brilliant. Yeah. I actually think that Zach Morris is Trash is what attributed to the renaissance for Saved by the Bell, because I think it was soon after that then that the cast reunited to do like a skit on Jimmy Fallon. And yeah. It won't be until much then soon later, like, we get a revival. So,
yeah, I would say that the Jimmy Fallon, you know, like, reunion thing, and like, he did a bunch of different ones too. Like, that was definitely what prompted it. And he had excellent timing because, you know, right now is the day and age of remakes, reboots, and revivals. Mm-hmm. So he kind of like got a jump on that and like said, hey, you know, he did Back to the Future and all this other stuff. But, you know, you said that Saved by the Bell had a bit of a renaissance. And I guess I wasn't aware of that at all.
I mean, in terms of how it joined our, I guess, for some reason, like, Saved by the Bell was something that just got talked about a lot. And I want to say that a lot of it has to do with the guy who played Screech,
Dustin Diamond, yeah.
Dustin Diamond, right? I think he wrote, like, a very salacious book about, like, behind-the-scenes drama. Although, according to some of the other cast members, like, it's all fabricated. Or a good chunk of it is fabricated.
Yes, in 2009, he published an inside story of the show's cast and crew from his point of view, titled "Behind the Bell."
Yeah, and I want to say that then Lifetime, soon after that, kind of picked it up and made like a Lifetime original movie based off of the salacious stories in it.
Yeah, well, they did a whole Oprah Where Are They Now segment on it, but that's all it says, at least on this link that I found.
Interesting. No, I remember,
but a lot
the
of people
Lifetime
did
movie.
Yeah. They counted him. They said that he did fabricate a lot of stuff, and he even claimed that many parts of the books, such as allegations of teen sex and drug use, were fabricated from very minor statements he made during some interviews.
Oh,
so, you know,
I didn't
knows?
Read the book, but now I'm sad.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it's sad because, you know, as we record this in March 2021, he has unfortunately passed.
Right, he did. And he had, like, I don't think he was at all even considered for them bringing him back for the revival because of the book.
Yeah. And because, really, you know, he didn't, his private life was one that, you know, we were all kind of aware was a little troubled, if, you know, in quotation marks.
Why? So, was it?
Yeah, actually. Well, he was arrested a few times. You know, he was convicted of misdemeanors for them. You know, I think he even went to jail for 4 months. So,
oh,
you know,
look at
like
that. He was living the cool life.
Yeah, he well, you know, we all know about like child actors in Hollywood. You know, sometimes they are victims of some hardcore abuse, you know. So hey, any parents out there listening, you know, don't have child become actors in Hollywood. Just don't do it.
Well, Eddie's not here, and he isn't here to stop me from proclaiming how I'm gonna push my child to be a childhood actor. I'm going to be a stage mom, and I love it. Oh. I can't wait.
You're going to be, having a musical about you maybe one day called Gypsy.
Maybe. Oh, my God. How great would that be?
But, you know, this is, we're talking a lot of here and there about it. And, you know, I think it's time we got into some history so we can really start sharing our thoughts on the original version of Saved by the Bell.
Let's go.
So, Saved by the Bell, it was broadcast from August of 1989 to 1993. So only four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It actually started off as a Disney Channel series. Did you know this?
I knew this. I'd never seen it. I mean, yes. I feel like any fan of Saved by the Bell knows this. That it was, oh, did you know this was a spinoff? Yeah, bitch, I knew it was a spinoff. Like, come on, give me something new. That's how I feel like anytime someone tries to drop that fact on me. But go on.
Yeah, well, the show was called Good Morning, Miss Bliss. It was a Disney Channel show. And I think it only lasted for a season.
Yeah,
but it
wasn't.
They later took it and they repackaged it. Yeah, mm-hmm. As Saved by the Bell. So, you know, it was more so about the show, but there were two characters, actually three, actually four.
Mr. Belding came back. So Mr. Belding
was there.
Zach
was the breakout star, and they're like, let's do a whole show about him.
Uh-huh.
There was also
Screech.
And I think even Lisa was in it.
Okay, that I don't know. I know of the male characters who came back. Because from my understanding, the Good Morning, Miss Bliss was more focused about the teachers than it was the students.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like a side character and, mm-hmm. and he was, you know, successful enough that they were like, we should make a show about him since in this one, he's just a side character.
Right. And that went from Disney and then it goes to NBC.
Yes. It becomes a syndicated show. It becomes a primetime show and then syndicated and stuff. So it moves from Disney, which back then, you know, Disney Channel wasn't what it is today. And it gets, you know, big bills.
What primetime showing was Saved by the Bell?
When it originally aired?
Yeah, like, how was it primetime? I think it was like a Saturday morning. That's not primetime. That's a Saturday morning.
I don't think it was Saturday morning.
It was not primetime. There's no way that Saved by the Bell was primetime.
Let's see. Let's airing in primetime on August 20th, 1989. Yeah.
Really? What?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
What? Let's ask, what time slot
is considered prime time? Prime time is considered between the hours of 8 p.m. through 10 p.m., maybe 11 p.m. But it's usually 8 p.m. through 11 is considered prime time, Monday through Friday. Actually, I don't even know if Friday is considered part of prime time.
Yeah. It did. 8:30 p.m. was its time.
Wow. I did not know that about Saved by the Bell. Okay, there you go.
Mm-hmm. But it was so successful, and they knew it was a television show that kids were watching, so they did move it to air Sundays from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. in syndication.
Okay.
But, so Saved by the Bell lasted four seasons, and it follows this character, Zach Morris. Pretty much the person who created him, whose name is Mark Engel or Peter Engel. He called him, in quotation marks, the kid who would be that incorrigible kid who would lie to your face, letting you know very well that he's lying and make you love him for it all the same. So he was kind of like the guy that you love to hate or hate to love.
Wow. Did this show have a profound influence on me without me realizing it? Because I kind of was that kid growing up. I'm thinking about it now.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe you watch the show and it's like, it pays to be a shithead.
And maybe. Wow. That's some deep soul searching I got to do.
maybe you really got to, like, sit on a couch and, you know, think about it. But
talk to a psychiatrist and just be like, this is problematic. We need to fix this.
But, yeah, so, you know, originally in the Good Morning, Miss Bliss, the show took place in Indianapolis. In Indiana.
Oh, interesting.
But then when they made it a new show, and you know, when they had new characters, they moved it to Los Angeles, to California at least.
Yeah. They don't have to explain it for the show. It's a new show, but that's funny.
Yeah, they were like, let's get the hell out of Indiana, because you know, who lives there? Sorry, I don't want to offend any of our listeners.
I was gonna say, it's just like, well, they know. If they're in Indiana, they know.
And they wanted to make it a show focused on kids. So to round out the cast, we have his best friend, whose name is Samuel, in quotation marks, Screech Powers, who is very much his nerdy, you know, passive best friend who pretty much will do anything and everything that Zach tells him to do.
Screech is not Zach's best. Well, Screech is not Zach's best friend, but Zach is definitely Screech's best friend.
Well, who would you say is Zach's best friend? I don't think he even really has a mirror. Quote unquote best friend, but that's himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next, we have A.C. Slater, who is conceived as a young John Travolta type who would be an army brat and wear a leather jacket.
But
that's how he was conceived.
That was how he was conceived. That's not what he ended. He was actually mostly shirtless or in a tank top.
Yes, know? He was. Yeah. They originally conceived him as an Italian, but then when they got Mario Lopez, you know, they actually reworked some of his plot and backstory as, you know, a Latino kid who had to change his name from Sanchez to Slater.
So. Did that come up, like his Hispanicness?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think even watching it, I never associated him with Hispanic.
Well, so I didn't see this episode, but when doing my research, they did state that his real last name was Sanchez, but that they had to change it when he joined the army because of fear of, you know.
Oh, racism.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I see. So. Yeah, I watching the show, and I didn't do my due diligence here in terms of finding out, but I was just like, did they ever address the fact that he is Hispanic? At least Mario Lopez. We know Mario Lopez is Hispanic, but
yeah,
I didn't know if A.C. Slater was Hispanic or he was just like a tan Italian.
That's true. Yeah. You know? I don't really remember them ever like addressing it in any of the episodes that I saw. Now, granted, when I didn't really rewatch the show, I watched a bunch of recaps on YouTube with Zach Morris's trash.
Rightfully so.
I think that's
the way you
they're
do it in 2021.
Yeah.
They are. They're so good.
And they're so entertaining.
Let's drop a link to a couple of our favorite ones because
absolutely
they're so good.
But yeah, so I can't remember a lot of them. I read in like stuff, you know, I did a lot of reading actually about Saved by the Bell. So I should have just rewatched them, but I chose to go the hard way.
I chose to rewatch some of them, guys, but only some of the ones that I feel like bring the most entertainment value. So
yeah, which. Which for me wouldn't be much, but
that's you're wrong on that one because that show is absolute camp and it is so still watching it. Like, yeah, it's not a good show, but my God, is it like still delicious, like fun?
Oh, God, I disagree, man. I mean, camp doesn't always make delicious fun. Sometimes
this one
camp
it does. Come on. Are you trying to tell me that Jesse Spanos taking caffeine pills
that
is not
the
camp?
Only, oh, no, the no, only no, no, moments no. that are fun about this show are the ones that don't revolve around Zach Morris. And you'll be like, you'll find
oh, no, yeah. I agree with
those.
You. Another great campy moment is one where they're rapping to the Seven Dwarfs, right? Like they're doing a school play. And they're doing, like, for some reason, they decide to rap it. The show is absolutely...
But it's only fun from a 2021 perspective.
Oh, yeah. It's
back
like,
on their
it, it's
childhood
fun.
Show and how 90s it was, you know?
When I'm saying it's fun, like, yeah, it's... Like, is this a show that I would, like, want to watch with my friends? Absolutely not. I'm watching this in secret and just saying it's just like, oh, my God, this is terrible. Who...
That's true.
You know? Yeah.
This is one of those shows that like you're like, oh, this would be so much fun. You know, let's like have a couple drinks or smoke some weed, watch it. And then when you're watching it, you're like, oh, my God, this was a terrible idea. Why did we watch this?
You play a drinking game. Anytime he pauses, you know, time, you're just like, shot.
Time out. Yeah. Or he takes out his 90s phone.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be smashed. But so anyway, we should talk about the women, though, because like I said, the best and the most redeeming part and sometimes the most painful part are the ladies. We have Zach Morris's love interest, played by Tiffany Amber Thiessen, Kelly Kapowski, who, you know, was everyone's idea of the perfect lady back in the 90s, even though my personal favorite was Elizabeth Berkley as Jessie Spano. Yeah, she was the it girl.
Oh, Jessie, it's so funny. Jessie Spano was so hated by so many of the fans.
What?
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, if you ask any fan, like, she was probably the least favorite character, and I... In retrospect, it's just like she was easily the most woke person. She was vegetarian. She was an activist.
Yeah.
She was feminist.
She was ahead of her times there. I'm sure in the 90s those things were eye rolls. But
they were. And that's how she was kind of supposed to be portrayed as, like an eye roll. Like, ugh, this chick.
That's actually kind of... I didn't know that.
You didn't realize this? You didn't rewatch it. But yeah, her activism, her feminism... is the butt of jokes.
Yeah, well, it was the 90s too. I guess hated, you mean in terms of audience or characters?
Audience. No, not the characters. The characters loved her. Like, she was part of the clique.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
No, I loved her. And she was always my favorite, you know, so.
But I liked her. I liked her when she called men pigs. I was screaming that out for a while as a kid. I didn't know why. like I was.
And last but not least, we do have Lisa Turtle, played by Lark Voorhees, who is the only person of color in the friend group.
What are you talking? Hello? Mario Lopez.
No, you said you're so yourself yeah, that you didn't know whether or not he
this
was
is true.
Spanish.
All right, I would agree with you. Like, if I was a kid and you told me that, if you told me that she was the only person of color, I would have been like, yeah, that's obviously true. Like,
yeah. She's and like we said, too, we can't recall any episodes where they actually made a commentary about him being the only Latino kid. So.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's our
although did they ever make any episodes where they call out her blackness?
That I don't know.
Right?
I think we can.
Because otherwise, she's just like, she's like the rich fashionista. But whether or not, like, you know, her race plays a role into her character. And I think that's also fine. Like, for a kids show, like, you don't need to explain your race or have a whole episode dedicated to your race, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I will give it to them that where it was like, it was normalized and it should have been normalized.
Right. So.
Yeah, the show was very successful, and like we said, it did spin off a lot of shows. It had Saved by the Bell, The College Years, which was only one season.
Oh, really? I thought it was two seasons, and I watched them all.
Do you remember the
TV movie
comedy film Hawaiian Style?
Oh, no, I don't remember that one. I remember the one where Zach and Kelly got married. I saw that one.
In Las Vegas? Yeah.
Yes.
I remember both of them.
Well, they were on their way to Vegas to elope, but then by the end they have like a nice little yard wedding and Elizabeth Berkley comes back to give him a hug. She wasn't in the movie, but she was only there at the end.
I don't think I saw this one.
Oh, it's not good. I don't remember
Wait
that
a minute.
Well,
okay.
But.
So which one is the woman from The King of Queens in? And I can't remember her name.
Leah Remini?
Leah Remini. Yeah, she was in one. Which one was that?
I think
that?
She... In a movie?
Was it Hawaiian Style?
It had to be, I guess. She probably played a Hawaiian.
Yeah, because I know she was in one. She would probably play the
She's kind of... She's ethnically ambiguous, right? Like, I feel like back then they would have thrown her that role of, like, she's Hawaiian, obviously.
This look is true. Let me see. I'm gonna look it up because I know she was in one. I remember seeing her. No, so she was just in... late episodes of Saved by the Bell.
So what, the college years or
like it was like the summer episodes? That's why
were summer episodes. I do remember that.
There were,
like,
yeah.
Yes. Was that like a separate
and who
season
was that
though?
Other girl. No, I think it was like later seasons.
Okay, Tori. You're thinking Tori.
Tori.
So because there is like a season when Kelly isn't there.
So they bring in Tori.
She's, like,
the
new love interest.
Girl with the leather jacket and the curly hair.
Correct.
And listens to Nirvana, maybe.
And she's a mechanic.
Yeah. Which is like, so before they were making fun of Jesse Spano for being a feminist, but then here comes a character who embraces all this like third wave of feminist principles.
Right. And ends up winning over Zach Morris.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she had tits, so of course.
She was pretty
attractive.
So let's
attractive.
Talk about
this is,
I mean,
Zach
this is a beautiful
Morris.
Cast. Let's be real.
It is a beautiful cast. So, and it's heralded by Zach Morris, who's, you know, I mean, most girls had a crush on him. You know, he had that beautiful blonde hair and like very 90s, early 90s style. You know, everyone thought he was the cutest thing ever.
Did you have
a crush on him?
No, I distinctly remember never liking him, like having a crush on him. I might have been too young to start having crushes, though. But in retrospect, watching the show now, I'm just like, wow, he is a very, very handsome young guy. Like, he is, like, the. I mean, this is just a beautiful cast. Outside of, sorry, Screech. Screech.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Like, this is a gorgeous, gorgeous cast. And I think it sets a template for, like,
pretty,
those. Yeah, and no, let's be real. But that's why he was cast like that. Let's, you know. But I think it starts off the template for, like, those, like, Nickelodeon, Disney Channel shows going forward, right? Like, they're going to cast, like, beautiful people only, exclusively.
Yeah, well, this has been a trend that definitely happened in the 90s. And I think that continued well until only recently when it was like, oh, your cast has to be beautiful. Like, you can't have real-looking people in your cast. Like, only recently were they like, oh, right, yeah, no, we should have people who, like, aren't skinny as hell. Or, yeah, we should have people who, like, don't fit this quote-unquote standard of beauty. That has been something that a lot of like millennials and then even like Gen Zers grew up watching. Only recently have they not like done that, you know? So it's also like this is very much from a time and period where everyone had to be pretty. And the person who wasn't, Screech, was the butt of everyone's jokes.
Of course. Yeah, all the jokes. Mm-hmm. All the jokes. Agreed.
So, like, he doesn't even really have a real personality. He's so passive. He's such a doormat. And, you know, he's just privy to... Well, at the end of the day, too, there's a word for what Zach Morris is. He's like...
A user?
He's a sociopath.
He is a sociopath. Yeah, that's an appropriate word to describe him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a lot of things, but at the end of the day, he's definitely a sociopath, you know? So
I mean, I feel like this show captured it. He is trash.
Yes, I'm not going to go into... If you want to know how shitty Zach Morris is, you should watch Zach Morris's Trash. But then you watch it, and you're like, oh my God, he's trashy. And then you're like, oh wait, but I watched this as a child. And when I was a child, I looked at this as like, he was cool, and this is what I was want to be. So like you just said, what kind of impact did that have on me growing up, you know?
Right.
And like, what kind of impact did that have on us in terms of what it was to be cool?
I know, it's because our options were limited. Like, it's we are watching this after school or Montel. You
know? And that's saying, come on, look at what that's saying about our childhoods, guys. But you know, it's so interesting too, because when you look at Wikipedia, it says, primarily focusing on lighthearted comedic situations, it occasionally touches on serious social issues, right?
Oh, it did. I mean, I could tell you right off the bat. Do you know any social issues that it touched upon?
Yes, I do. Drug use.
The drug use. Let's talk about that drug use episode. Well, yeah. I think they had a couple. But my favorite one, there's two big drug use moments in the show. But my favorite one is the one where they cast, of course, the clique to be in part of a PSA commercial, an anti-drug commercial. And they have like a hot celebrity who's going to like direct it, and he's going to be in it with them, right? And then, of course, he has the hots for Kelly. I think that's not appropriate because she's like a high school student. He's like above 18. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is borderline statutory rape that's happening here. Anyway, he invites her to a party. And at this mansion party that she's at, she's making out with him. And then she sees him smoking weed. And oh, shit. What does she do? She doesn't smoke weed, but she does go and snitch. Wow. Shady. And they refuse to be in the commercial with him. And instead, they do their own commercial where they call... smoking marijuana stupid, dumb, crazy, and I was just like, ugh. That episode did not resonate with me, but that rewatching it, because that's one of the episodes I rewatch, I'm just like, oh, this is so bad. It's so good. It's so I mean, that commercial is so like this awful.
It's so that's like the kind of project that middle schoolers do.
It is even, like it was called Dare.
Dare back you know? In the day when Dare was a thing. And it's interesting too, because the only reason why Zach Morris was like upset at this director was because he was stealing his girl.
That is also true, actually.
You know, so the motivations of these characters too are like nothing to be applauded.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the other famous drug use episode is the best episode of all time, where Jesse Spano gets addicted to caffeine and
pills.
She slowly starts losing control of her life to the point where she, you know, while trying to balance studying and all the stuff, which most of that is Zach Morris's fault. But
right, because he's pushing her to be part of a band.
Yeah, pushing her to be in a band, and they almost got a record deal, even though, you know, she's like has dreams of, you know, like going to college. So she's trying to ace her tests and do her projects and stuff. And the pressure's getting to her, and, you know, she breaks down singing "I'm So Excited" by the Pointer Sisters. It's fantastic. Everybody, most millennials know this.
I mean, I didn't rewatch that scene only because just like that is ingrained forever in my memory.
It's so alive in my head. So.
Yeah. Like, I don't need to rewatch. I could tell you exactly what she's wearing. She's wearing like a cut off sweatshirt that like exposes her shoulder. I think she's wearing a purple bandana.
Yeah. She's wearing something in her hair. Yes. Yeah. And it was so prolific that it even got referenced in the new version. So,
I mean, you just can't do Saved by the Bell and not reference that one.
Yeah.
Any other hot topic issues come to mind for you?
DUI, drinking under the influence.
That's a good one. I don't think they got a DUI, though. They just crashed the car.
They did, which was Zach's fault again.
And it was also Lisa's car, too. So poor Lisa.
Yeah, he ruined so many people's lives. Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the episodes that I remember, and they covered this in Zach Morris's Trash, is the episode of the chubby girl, the quote unquote chubby girl.
Oh,
who just
okay.
also has really bad fashion sense. You know,
yeah, I did not see this one, so makeover. Enlighten
well,
me.
Yeah, so she has a crush on Zach, and they like talk. I think they like somehow exchange letters, and then when they realize like who he's talking to, and it's oh, it's the chubby girl. You know, he like doesn't want to be seen with her. He doesn't want to, you know, go out to the Mac with her. He's just embarrassed because she's quote unquote chubby. The Max, sorry. And it's really messed up. At the end of the episode too, he kind of like comes to terms with facts that like, hey, you know, girls are people should be judged on who they are as people and not based on their weight and stuff, you know. So like in terms of social issues, I would say that's one of them, you know, like weight is a social issue. And like dating people of a certain weight. And back in the day too, that was way worse. I mean, we just said this last week in Punky Brewster. The butt of the jokes was that woman's weight, and she wasn't even that heavy.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, so women's weight and also is a social issue. I mean, and you're not a woman, so I don't know if you can resonate when I say this, but like
I'm a gay man, Nicole. Like, yeah,
you can somewhat relate. Yeah,
like nowhere near as bad as like I'm sure women in all their lives, but like. After coming out, like, yeah, it's pretty vicious for us.
Oh, no,
men.
It's
gay
just,
men.
Unfortunately, I actually don't even want to discriminate. Like, everyone knows, man or woman, you know for sure how, like, pressures of society of being a certain weight affect you. Mm-hmm. But also, like, you know, that's why women have developed things like anorexia and bulimia. You know, a woman can, like, look one way and she won't see it because of what people say about her. So that's, like, that should be considered a social issue if it's not.
Sure. No, I agree with you. That's fine. I mean, the other so. I mean, the one social issue episode that also really, and I rewatched this one because it is, I don't know, funny, I guess. But mm-hmm. there was an episode where they struck oil. I don't know if you remember this one, right?
I don't think I do. All
right. So Bayside strikes it rich with oil. And so they're going to start drilling in the school. However, that causes a rift between the group and Jessie. Obviously, she's the environmentalist, right? She's mm-hmm. protesting this and she believes that, no, this is going to hurt the school. Guess who's right? Oh, and Zach is just like, all he's thinking about is just like, no, think of all the money we're going to get. For some reason, the students all think that the money's going to go to them. Not how I would work, but regardless, what ends up happening, though, is that the drilling causes like leaks all over from like the football field to, more importantly, like the swamp outside of the school. And they were raising like these ducks and stuff, part of their environmental club or something. And, you know, Zach's duck dies. And lo and behold, that's where Zach Morris has a change of heart when something affected him personally. That's the takeaway. Yep. That is the takeaway with Zach Morris. Like, he always learns a lesson when it affects him personally, which yep. is why he is a terrible, terrible human being.
A terrible human being, a terrible character. And, like, I guess my overall thoughts of Saved by the Bell as an adult, and especially an adult in, like, you know, 2021, is just how terrible of a show this is for children to watch.
I know. This show had nothing educational to say.
Nothing. So it's interesting, too, because if you visit it, it says, in later years, Saved by the Bell has been classified as educational and informational. And
informational,
the show,
maybe.
Maybe. And the
Where
show
am I gonna
was
learn
named
about
one
caffeine
of the
pills?
Best 20 school shows of all time. Now, that's just... It's so infuriating on so many levels. But, you know, it's interesting because even though, yes, some of these episodes are about social issues, and yes, maybe some of these episodes are addressing actual things that are happening. You know, this was in a time before the internet. So, like, if children, they were mainly getting a lot of information from television. So television had to address these issues, right? Like, it was almost, like, required 80s.
It was required, television. Yeah.
But it's, like, the show... It's how they tackle it through the lens of this shitty character who gets away with so much and who uses everyone around him and disrespects everything and everyone. And mm-hmm. that has more of an effect on us. So, like, yeah, maybe we're learning about drug use and that drug use is bad. And, you know, we're learning about things like homelessness and divorce and environmental issues. But
the
how are we
learn
learning
about?
It? Yeah. Like, yeah. In what way are we being told it?
You know? We're learning, you're right, we're learning it in the lens of like, wow, this really can affect you personally, so you should really do something about it, which is, wow, what a horrible message. Like,
true.
I should care about the environment, not because my duck is going to die. I should care about the environment because, like, guess what, like, you know, it's, well, I mean, that's a hard one because that is going to affect us regardless, so
yeah. But I mean, that's also why there's so many self-involved people walking around. You know, and like we also, there's a lot of people out there who are like angry at other people, you know, instead of like reflecting it back on themselves. And there's so much like hatred out there, you know, because we're also, this is kind of, I'm not saying it's Saved by the Bell is responsible. I'm not saying that. But at the same time, if you look at the media that people, you know, of a certain age group grew up watching, you know, it benefits to be self-absorbed. You know, you should only really don't do well in school, but like, hey, try and kick ass and be in movies and form your own girl rock band and use your friend's car and then like trash it or whatever. Like, it's just all of these things that we're like getting and that's sticking with us and realizing, oh, that's how you make it in the world.
Right. No, it's true. It's true.
Yeah. And it's, and then it's like, and then we get, you know, regardless of how you feel about him, that's when we end up with Donald Trump as our president, who's a businessman who can pretty much mouth off and still become the president. That actually gets reflected in this new reboot, right? Where the fact that Zach Morris, this shitty sociopath, becomes the governor of California.
That was an excellent segue.
And it's almost like, well, what is this? Oh, right. We're in a time frame where, or is the show like realizing that, hey, actually people like him actually fucking make it in the world? You know, is that what they're trying to say about that? Is that, are they being realistic or are they just being tongue in cheek? Who knows? Let's discuss this.
Let's
new...
discuss it because, yeah.
Yo, mama. Sorry, Dr. Mama.
How do you think this year's going to go for these new students?
I'm psyched.
You're excited for the first day of school?
I would say, like, when it comes to having a voice, that is ultimately the voice that it chose to tackle.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, full disclosure, listeners, we did choose to do this one. However, we would be remiss to say that we can only watch 3 episodes because, you know,
it
Peacock.
Was such, yeah, it you, was Peacock and yeah. such short, like, last minute notice. Yeah. We only got, like, the suggestion 2 days.
Oh, no. If so. I could watch more episodes, I would have probably watched more episodes.
I would not have.
Yeah, I would have, but... Peacock, you know, you're recommending us to do your show here. How about you give us?
We did 2 of your shows
a subscription
in
yeah.
a row. Yeah. So Peacock, right? It's trying to enter this world of streaming. So it's like we got to put content that's going to make people want to subscribe to us, right? So Punky Brewster was one of them. The fact that they have The Office is another one of them. And Saved by the Bell is very much, you know, they're targeting people in their 30s. Who can pay for streaming subscriptions. And they're like, hey, sign up for Peacock so you can watch this new Saved by the Bell reboot.
Correct.
And I do know a couple of people who watched it, but it's, I mean, at least I'm 32. I know a lot of people around my age group, whether they be a couple years younger, a couple years older. Not so many of us have been dying to watch this.
I mean, I'm not dying to have a new subscription service. So that's why I
yeah,
was
exactly.
just like, no, thank you.
Yeah, these people, like, think that we're richer than we are. Millennials are poor, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stop yeah. it. Now they got Paramount TV coming out and all this shit. It's like,
well, that's part of... if you had CBS All Access, you had Paramount TV.
Oh, whatever. I don't even have that, but...
I don't know why. They thought that Paramount TV makes them sound cooler, but it's just like, again, you know your audience. Like, what cool millennial outside of Nicole could tell you the history of Paramount, you know?
This is true. This is true. So they decided to do Saved by the Bell, and I guess somewhere along the way, too, they were just really self-aware about, one, the day and age that they were in, but two, of how poorly Saved by the Bell has aged in terms of Zach Morris's trash and,
absolutely.
And whatnot.
No, they decide. I can't speak on behalf of the writers, but the writers definitely, I feel, saw Zach Morris's trash, and they're like, yeah, he is trash. You know what? This whole world is trash. Let's figure out how we can tell a story in this world that might resonate with some audience members in this day and age.
Okay.
And I think that's ultimately the voice that they were trying to take on. Do you want to give a basic premise or do you want to...
You can do
it.
All
right, fine.
You could do it.
So the basic setup of the show is that Zach Morris is governor of California. And he did something to the budget to fuck it up. And now the schools are under budgeted and they have to close down some schools, particularly lower income neighborhoods, poorer neighborhoods, neighborhoods that belong to minorities. So at a press conference, this is where it gets a little crazy, but at a press conference that he's holding, some black guy, I think that's important to know, a black guy who is a reporter mentions him as like, yo, why don't you just let all these like poor students go into these rich schools that can even the playing field? And next thing you know, like the entire press corps is rallying against this black guy. Maybe you should be governor. And Zach Morris, feeling very intimidated by the black man, decides like, no, that's my idea. Yeah, let's do it. And that is how minority students end up coming to Bayside High.
Yeah.
And this story really focuses more so on these minority students at Bayside High, because Bayside High is kind of like this bubble where it is, it still feels like the Bayside High that we grew up with as kids, like kind of this vapidness, this shallowness, this this just
privilege.
Privilege, right? And our main characters, who are Daisy, Aisha, and Devante, they're Hispanic and black and from poor neighborhoods, and this is their chance to not achieve something, but like they have an opportunity here that they would never have had Zach Morris not fucked up the school budget so bad. And it's ultimately a culture clash between these two. Maybe not so much culture clash. It's more about this idea of what it means to be a minority in a very, very white world. Does that make sense? I think that's ultimately, so this is ultimately, all right, this, it's important that I'm actually glad we're covering this episode this week, considering what we were talking about last week with Punky Brewster, where you and I both agree that they were checking off check marks.
Yeah.
You can make the argument that this show was checking off check marks.
Yeah.
However, it did so, I think, in a very organic way that was part of this story, where I was just like, is the writing great? No. But you know what? Like, I think they figured out a way to give me this very organic story about minorities in Bayside that I'm just like, I'm kind of here for. And I was kind of surprised at like how much I was really rooting for these three characters, you know?
Yeah.
That's the basic premise of the show.
Yeah, I agree that the main three characters are really likable and I like their stories. But does that translate into me liking the show? I'm not sure yet. I still haven't figured out how I feel about this show.
Yeah, three episodes was not enough, Peacock.
I mean, it was more so like, you know, for me, when I watch the podcast, when I watch things for the podcast, I always try and think critically of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this one really kind of sent me down like a spiral almost, you know. And I actually found an article and where the person that I read that I want to quote from in a little bit, where the person felt the same exact way as me.
Okay.
And she said something really great that I want to point out. But, you know, the show's doing kind of two things at once. It's giving you references and like, you know, revisiting old things that you loved about Saved by the Bell. But then at the same time, it's giving you new perspectives and new ideals to it. Right. So it's kind of like trying to, you know, balance both of those. And it's interesting how it happens, because you do have these new characters. Then you have the old characters, and then you have the old characters' children. And then there are other friends.
Right.
Like there's Mac Morris, who is the child of Zach Morris and Kelly Kapowski, who they got married, and you know, she's the first lady. There's Jesse Spano's child, who, side note, apparently Jesse Spano, she was so successful when she got older, right? She became a New York Times bestselling author. She gave TED Talks. She was in politics. What the hell is she doing?
Being a counselor.
Bayside, being a counselor.
It's like, I don't know. I don't think it gets so explored in the next 10 episodes, but I think that she is kind of a little bit of a helicopter mom.
And yeah, well,
possibly why she ended up taking the job as counselor at this school.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
Probably. And then A.C. Slater teaches physical education and football, which is really appropriate.
Yeah, that may be appropriate. But like, I will say this. This is kind of me as a Hispanic. They finally, in the first episode, they bring up the fact that he is Hispanic. They address it, that he is Mexican. But I'm kind of pissed off though at the fact. It's just like, oh, great. So all the rest of the white cast gets like these great futures, but poor A.C. Slater is kind of, you know, eating hot dogs in his shitty apartment, and he has to come to the PTA meeting to eat donuts. I don't know. They kind of gave him a shitty life that, like, I don't know. I feel like A.C. Slater was destined for more greatness.
Yeah, true.
More so than Zach Morris.
Yeah, well, that's also like, what are they trying to say too? Being a shitty ass sociopath will get you everywhere in life.
Because
mm-hmm. AC Slater was always way more grounded and like a way more believable character than, I guess, or likable, I should say.
Yeah.
Maybe it is believable that there are Zach Morris.
I think it was
there.
The muscles, but.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we know why Jesse Spano is so successful and yet she's teaching there. It's just an excuse to get them back on the show.
Of course.
But at the same time, maybe if you're going to make Jesse Spano so successful, then why couldn't he also have had all these successes but chose to be at Bayside? It was definitely the depiction.
Yeah, or just tone down the successes.
Yeah, or
that's
that.
That's the other simple solution. Make them realistic.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Like Zach Morris becoming governor, that I'm not saying that it's possible, but it's not impossible. He could have lied his way to the top easily, right? I think they even said that the reason he's a governor is to get out was to get out of a parking ticket or something. It's not implausible. But for the rest of the characters, like, they didn't need to be like have all these like great futures ahead of them. They could have had normal lives. And I would have been okay with that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's this whole reboot is very interesting because it's one
revival.
I think it's classified as a reboot.
How? I would say it's a revival.
I would say so too. But yeah. If you look it up, it's called.
All right, well, Hollywood.
Wait, okay,
Hollywood
is a revival.
Okay, let's say like Hollywood don't know their own terms.
That's true, and they don't. Yes. But this revival is so interesting because I guess the writers were like, tasked with something. We really want to revive Saved by the Bell, but like we all know what kind of show it was and like what your audience is going to critique about the show and what your audience might expect from it. So they're like, okay, so let's give them somewhere in between, right? And it wanted to be woke. And
yes.
Did it succeed in being woke? I want to read something from this article that I was telling you about that I found
on
Vox.
I can't wait. And we will link this article, guys. So
yes.
Check out the show notes.
It's definitely a fun read, actually, because of, how organically the writer is. But so in its attempt, this is in quotes from the article, in quotes, in its attempt to be sincerely woke in a parody context, this revival, she said reboot, this reboot sometimes teeters on the brink of becoming a completely non-woke meta-parody of wokeness.
Okay.
That's probably not what the show's writers intended, but it's the risk you take when the show's attempts at sincerity are part of the joke.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of these episodes she saw, right? Because I can only
speak to
the...
She watched all of them.
Okay, I only can speak to the three that I had seen. I don't... agree that the sincerity, usually from Daisy, the main character, who by the way gave me so much America Ferrera energy and I was just living for it, by the
yeah,
way.
She's great.
The three minority casts of this show are definitely like the highlight of this show in my opinion. But she I don't think like her story arc, like anything that came sincere from her, or even Aisha's storyline, or even Devante's storyline, like in those three episodes, like nothing there kind of felt like part of that parody, right? I don't think that ever came. I think it was, if anything, highlighted the absolute farce that is Bayside for me, right? It was a perfect foil, I think. They yes. were the perfect foil.
Well, so you think that the only sincerity is within those three, right?
Yes, absolutely. Like, because Max, so far from the first three episodes that we saw, there's nothing sincere about him. And I think he is made to be that. Like, he is absolutely vapid and shallow and privileged. And, he might, I think they hinted that he might be trying to, he might be open to change. But for the most part, like, this is what we're getting. And it is going to be, I feel like the rest of the story is going to be a constant struggle between our main character, Daisy, and like this privilege.
I see.
My opinion. And again, I wish I had seen more episodes so I could like make that assessment.
Well, when they write about sincerity, right, it's not so much in like characters having their moments, but in terms of plot, right?
Right.
Like sincerity is also trying to be sincere about privilege. And all this stuff. And I see what they're saying in the terms where it's like so much of it has become parody that it's almost like anytime it's trying to be sincere in terms of them being underprivileged or, you know, some of the characters being like written off because of their color, their skin mm-hmm. color, it feels ironic.
But does it? Because I think, and this is why I actually think the third episode probably did the best one with this, right? Where it wasn't, Aisha was struggling with, for example, her own internalized racism that she and can feel. And I think us as Latinos, we can probably relate to that a lot. You know, in our community, like the darker your skin tone, like, you know, you get. You are just, there is like a Hispanic like hierarchy, and like the darker your skin tone, like the lower you fall. And there's also this idea. I love the episode where she's just struggling with like the ghetto-ness, right? She doesn't want to be associated with that, right?
Well, and I don't know if we saw the same episode though, because she more so was upset that Devante may or may not have stolen laptops because that's the reason she didn't get invited to a party.
No, right.
Was more self-absorbed.
It was. Right.
It wasn't
but
much her race, internal racism.
No. But then if you see by the ending of that, she kind of realizes like, oh shit, I was doing exactly what I was like trying to. Because yeah, you're right. Like they call around the fact that it's like, yeah, but you're only like pissed off at Devante stealing these things because like, you know, it's affecting you. She was acting very Zach Morris-like. I think. That, you know, and I think that's great because, like, I think we all have those Zach Morris moments where, you know, when something affects us is when we really take like a stance against it. But it was afterwards where she has this realization where it's just like, shit, I was doing the exact same thing that I was afraid that people were going to do to me because I am from like this poor. I mean, it was coded where they were talking. I mean, the show doesn't talk about race as much as it talks about privilege and like poor. But like, let's be real. Like, in this, it goes hand in hand in reality.
Yeah,
you know.
I guess you know for the most part too. It's anything with Daisy. You know, Daisy's awareness of being so underprivileged and like seeing the, you know, infuriating amount of privilege that's happening around her. It's just constantly a source of parody, and a joke. And it's like that is overwhelming. You know, like okay, for instance, in the first episode when she wants to run for student council. Mm-hmm. And she like you see the struggle of her trying to go around just to get pictures printed, right?
Yes.
And then she comes and she spent all night working on these posters. And then Lexi and Mac are like, oh, what? You don't have this or you didn't know this or blah, blah, blah. And their posters are everywhere. And then she just throws it out. Right. Just a joke. But like that right there, you could have actually had a sincere moment there of realizing how like, oh, my God, how fucked up that is. You know, how underprivileged she is. But it was just merely just a joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think, yeah, that was just a joke. Well, all right. Well, I will say this. I think that episode might have handled ultimately that storyline a little bit. It was probably like not the best handled because what ends up happening, the reason that she ends up becoming the student body president is because Lexi and Mac discover that they have to do a lot of work when they're president. So they kind of throw the race in Daisy's favor. But, yeah, I thought it was a fine joke because I think the principal then explains to her, like, yeah, the world, the universe is fucked up. Like, these kids
And you
are,
didn't feel that was ironic.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm also a fan of 30 Rock, and that felt like very 30 Rock-ish for kids.
I guess, well, we're also very I don't know if this show is for kids.
I can't imagine that it's for adults only, though.
No, but, well, that's the thing. Who the hell is this show for?
That's a great question. I don't know.
But we're also in this day and age where, we're really cynical. You know, like, we've seen everything. And two, like, I think at this point with our media and the way that, you know, our media has gotten cynical and stuff, it's like sometimes we can't even tell how ironic a show is being or how something turns out to be. And it's like, he's pretty much, you know, like, that whole life isn't fair thing, so like fuck fair. As much as I liked it, though, it was like, okay, so if this is the thesis statement that I'm supposed to be getting from the show, then is that also like me saying, oh, it's not fair that Zach Morris becomes governor, or is it not fair that you know all these minority people are constantly, you know, treated that they're literally kicked out of their own school, all of their budgets cut? Like, oh, it isn't fair, you know. So it's up to you to do something about it. Is that what this message?
But that's
is
not what he. That's not what his message is. His message is like, yeah, life is not fair, the universe. But you know what? You becoming student body president, the universe got something right, and now here's your chance. Do not lose this opportunity. If anything, I make the argument that it's more of a call to, yeah, sometimes activism, you know, let's be real, most of the time it doesn't pay off, unfortunately, and that is a damn shame, and that's why so many people do not. However, there is that one time where, like, it works. I think Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez is probably that perfect example, where it took so much for her to become a congresswoman. And now that she is, right, it's, you know, she's still getting heckled by the right, but you know what? She's still, like, actively fighting the good fight here, right? I mean, I feel like this girl was actually was a very thinly veiled, you know, Ocasio-Cortez here, in my opinion.
Okay, I could see
that. I saw it. Maybe. You're right. There is a cynicism to the messaging, but I think the cynicism, though, is fine because, like, it's not wrong, right? Like, I don't think it's wrong to say it's just like, you know what? This world is fucked and, like, the rich people only get richer. But you know what? You finally have a seat. You got a seat of power. However it happened, it doesn't matter. But you're here. Like, do something about it now. Now, yeah. Here's your chance for change. And I think that is probably the most honest message that I think I've heard in media in a while. And it's a fucked up message.
Yeah. And I see what you're saying, too. I guess it's, for me, it's like when you're constantly parodying. Am I saying that right? When you're constantly making a parody.
Parodying.
Out of woke culture. Uh-huh. Then it's like, okay, so what do we take seriously and what do we not take seriously, right? Because it's either people are, like, you know, all about woke culture, or people are, like, completely turned off by it. You know, there are people who are all about, like, things like, you know, oh, like, canceling and calling out people. And then there are those who are not. And it's like, it's almost like you can't be in between. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as if this show, too, is very much like making a joke out of all of it, you know, or at least like trying to either be like self-aware, too busy trying to be self-aware, or too busy trying to be woke, that it's like just constantly making a joke out of it.
And well, what do you, like, think? What parts do you think is trying to be too woke?
There. Okay. So the PTA, you know, Karen White Lady, or whatever.
Well, actually, I thought that. So that is not about being too woke. I think that's this.
Well, these are like trying to be aware and self-aware. And,
oh yeah, yeah. And there's an overcorrection that happens, and I think we criticize shows on overcorrection, right? Where,
yeah.
Well-meaning, but my God, does it sometimes just like belittle the cause? And I think that's like, yeah. I think that was a perfectly fine example of like something like that would happen.
Yeah, I guess it's just so more so that everything was a joke, you know? It was a moment that kind of felt like I was trying to be sincere, but still also was like kind of handled in a very parody way, was Aisha becoming the quarterback and Devontae trying out for the musical, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it was like setting you up. It's like, oh, here comes Devontae after Slater finally convinced him. And nope, it's Aisha, you know?
Which I loved.
Yeah, it was a cute reversal, but it also didn't feel sincere. Like, I don't know, like, everything kind of just felt ironic and like a joke, and it was just trying so hard to be cool and trying to redeem the property of Saved by the Bell. And one, do I even want this property of Saved by the Bell to be redeemed? But like, two, is it like, I think it was almost overwhelming for me. And a big example that I do want to point out, I guess,
sure,
is the character of Lexi, who I actually really, really like. And I
think
that
let's Josie talk Tota about Lexi.
Beautiful, but I hate that the moment we meet her, they tell me she's trans.
Okay, I don't disagree with you there. I wish it happened organically. There is something I do like about the way they handle Lexi's character.
Which is?
And I think the actress has spoken about this, right? The reason she took the role. I think that, yeah, introducing her as trans is the first thing you know about her. A little iffy. However, so far in the three episodes that we've seen, there is not one like trans centered storyline, right? She is just a normal girl in this world. She is very much like Lisa. Like, she is a mean girl. And I actually think that's actually quite a step forward for like trans representation, right? Like, where you can be anyone. And the actress has spoken candidly, and she said that like the reason she took the role was because she wanted to make a point. It's just like, I don't want like the focus of my character to be that I'm trans. I just want to be a normal girl. You know what? And they accomplished that. I actually think Lexi is a fine example of like how we should be treating characters. And I think that's part of the
absolutely.
I mean, that's
aside
part of like
from the
media
fact
criticism.
That she was introduced as a trans character. I mean, so in the,
how do you do that organically
episode,
though?
Like, third episode when she pretty much is like, oh, you know, I really like Jamie Spano, and mm-hmm. I you know, I want you to let this happen organically. You know, and she has that like quote unquote heart to heart, you know, with Daisy, and she wants to stop interfering. Could have happened right there.
That's fair.
We could have taken us three episodes to learn that about her.
I think, all right, I think, yeah, from a writing point of view, that could have been a little stronger. But, you know, I wonder if then that makes it a, if that makes, I guess you didn't have to turn that into a trans storyline, though.
Well, I guess you didn't have to, but at the same time, like we said, checking off all the check marks, they're like, okay, this is the pilot episode, we have to
you
win
actually,
people, so let
you
people could have
made a good joke
trans.
About that, too. You actually could have made a good joke about that where she, because then Daisy would have been like, oh my God. And he doesn't accept like, and he doesn't know that you're trans and stuff. Like, no, everyone knows I'm trans. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's because we've been best friends forever. I think you're right. Fair. You're right about that. They could have handled that a little bit more organically. However, I think missed opportunity, sure. But I think overall, the way they handled her Lexi was actually overall, I would say, pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I did. Lexi's one of the characters I like the most. You know, I actually kind of like, okay, yeah, you know, the show is like Mac is very much Zach, but today, so he's an idiot. He's self-absorbed, but like he's more so the butt of the joke in this one, kind of like
yes.
how Screech was in the last one.
Correct.
But then at the same time, his father is a governor. Like, and now what if, so now the show is pretty much making a commentary about my political, my country's, you know, politics and government ruling. Which is just so painful. It's not even funny. You know, it's like, oh, you're trying to be accurate with the fact that someone like Zach Morris can make it into politics. And it's like, unfortunately, I believe you. Like, yeah, he probably would be governor in 2021. Anything's possible.
Right.
But it's like, but it's trying to be woke to the point where it's just like, how do I say this? Is this the world that I want reflected in my media? You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like, so you're parodying woke culture, but maybe we should now, and like you're saying how hypocritical or, you know, ironic everything is, but maybe now we should take a step above it and we should start reflecting the world we want to see?
Well, I don't know, because I don't think this show was criticizing woke culture.
Oh, come on.
I don't. I actually don't.
The whole show itself is a commentary on woke culture. The fact that they brought back Saved by the Bell and had a Latino woman as the new Zach Morris is a statement on woke culture.
No, it's not. It's
had the show been made 5 years ago, it would not have had her as the main character.
It's not.
Hang on.
I think we might be getting our turn. What do you mean woke? Like having this is not like having the gender swap and a race swap is not itself a moment of wokeness. That's just a trend that we've been seeing in media.
Woke is defined as alert to injustice in society, especially racism, right?
Okay.
So it is an
fine.
Injustice to have a show without main characters that it's either we've seen so many shows about white people, so now people are like, you know, you'll be woke if you actually make a show that isn't about rich, privileged white kids.
Oh, okay, fine. But I think in terms of like in this crazy world that they've given us in Saved by the Bell, I think they did I think the way they handled it was actually organic. That's why I actually don't mind it. See, for me, it's about the story. And in terms of the story, like in terms of how you're going to introduce these characters, I think it makes sense. If you're giving me, now here's the thing. If this was just a world where it was just Saved by the Bell, like it's just going to be Saved by the Bell, and our focus is this Hispanic girl who just happens to live in Bayside, right? And she's just Hispanic in Bayside, that would be then where I would be like, well, how did she get there? I need to know these facts, right? They're giving me an explanation that I think makes sense. And I think because of the circumstances that she is poor and from a poor community, has to take a 2-hour bus ride to get to Bayside and stuff, I think it makes her a lot more relatable to me. And granted, the circumstances are farcical. Like this is, it's a comedy, you know? So I don't, you know, you can take things with a grain of salt here.
Well, here's the thing too, is that you're looking at it as a story, which is really nice. But at the same time, this is also a revival of Saved by the Bell.
It is, but I think it is a revival of Saved by the Bell, but like it's really just a name, right? Like it's not like,
well, that's the thing. I actually think I would have liked the show had it not been Saved by the Bell and it was just simply this show taken out of Bayside. and making a statement. Now, granted, maybe some of these commentaries wouldn't have hit as much, but because it's so busy trying to make all of these different statements, is that sometimes I'm like, okay, so you're not even trying to, like, you think it's relatable, and that's great. And I felt like I was almost there, but it was so busy trying to, like, do all these different things, you know, because at the end of the day, it can't just simply tell a story. It has to be very tongue-in-cheek and make all of its references to Saved by the Bell, that it felt imbalanced. And it more so just felt like, yeah, like ironical and like way too much of just trying to be like cool and yet funny at the same time, you know?
Yeah. I actually thought, I agree with you. Like, show does try to be cool. I actually found it to be way more heartwarming than I was expecting it to be. And I don't know. I guess in terms of like my sense of comedy, like I actually kind of, maybe I'm just cynical, where I was just like, yeah, I am. I think that Zach Morris would be governor and he would fuck up the budget that bad. And you know what? These poor Latino and black students now had to go to this fucking overprivileged school. They had to deal with their shit. And I'm watching their story. I'm like, you know what? I'm here for their fucking story, because I think from a storytelling point of view, like, it made sense. It started making sense to me.
I guess it's like, don't use my people as a way to try and redeem your shitty show about shitty white people.
I don't know if that's the thing. I think this is where we may have disagreement. I don't know if they're trying to redeem Saved by the Bell as much as they're just using it as the setting. I actually think that they're calling out Saved by the Bell more so than they're trying to redeem it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, because the show now has, like, a Hispanic lead, and your main cast is, like, predominantly, like, minorities. Well, Aisha and Devante, are they even in the credits? They are, right?
Yeah, they are.
Okay, good. Yeah. Thank God. I was about to say, it's just like, they are part of the...
Being called Saved by the Bell and trying to be self-aware about what Saved by the Bell was, in some way, is trying to also redeem it.
Well, hang on. Do you think that, like, is that... What about 21 Jump Street? Like, do you think that was trying to redeem the original? Yeah. Like, do you think that was trying to redeem that ridiculous show?
Well, I actually don't know. I've never seen the original 21 Jump Street, so I don't know how much of it they were trying to remark on the old one instead of just taking the premise
really
and putting it
glamorizing cops and poor white kids, you know, and not glamorizing them. It's kind of like really, you know, kind of making them.
Well,
bad.
Yeah. So because I never saw 21 Jump Street, I don't know what it had in relationship to its original source material. You know, how many times was it remarking back to it or like giving a commentary on
it? Brady Bunch. Brady Bunch. We both love Brady Bunch,
right?
Brady
Bunch, yeah.
Okay, I think that's a... it might not be the best example, but like Brady Bunch is a show, is a movie that kind of took the original premise and says, like, let's just drop them into the 90s, right? And see what happens. And I think it works. It, or from an organic, from a storytelling point of view, makes no sense. Right. But like it works because I think it's so wild and crazy and like it's such a great juxtaposition. Right.
Yeah. Well, also the Brady Bunch wasn't really trying to be serious at all. It was a straight up parody and not trying to have moments of sincerity. And when it did, it was clearly like this is coming from a parody standpoint, like when they're maybe losing their house, even though, you know, this house doesn't even have a toilet.
Interesting.
They're now trying to have these moments in Saved by the Bell. But when they have these moments, it doesn't have the desired impact.
Interesting. Now I'm starting to think that maybe Saved by the Bell, this would have worked as like a movie.
Okay, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm just wondering. I actually, because I mean, just these three episodes alone, I was here for the Daisy story. I'm here for Daisy, Aisha, and Devante, and I want them to succeed.
Yeah, I like them. But, you know, it's interesting that all the things that work about it have nothing to do with the original property, which is just, you know, we've often said this, too. It's like, hey, had this been its own thing, it probably would have succeeded way more. But because it needed the name and the property in order for it to get greenlit and to get people to watch it.
Well, for me, I guess the reason it works, is because, like, they are perfect foils for how the absurdity of the original Saved by the Bell. And I think that's why, for me, it works. Like, yes, I told you, rewatching this, it's just like, I enjoy watching Saved by the Bell because it's not that I'm rewatching this because it's like, it's great writing. I'm watching it because like, this is absolute absurdity. It is absolute cringiness. And now this show is basically taking that. Like, the only reason I was rewatching Saved by the Bell was for this podcast.
Yeah.
However, as I do everything, I do in reverse order. I was watching these new shows before I was rewatching Saved by the Bell. And I was saying, it's just like, shit, like this, it feeds to the nostalgia while still making me realize it's just like, wow, yeah, Saved by the Bell is terrible and cringy and awful. And they were calling that out throughout the whole series. For example, I think a great
Which
example
is why it's woke.
No. Not like the identity politics of it. I'm talking about like the actual plot lines of the show. Like, for example,
all of it was terrible.
I'm talking about literally the actual show. Like, there's an episode where both Jamie and Mac are after the same girl. It was ripped off an actual storyline from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
And throughout that whole, every time we cut to Daisy, like, she's just like wants to strangle them because they haven't figured out that they're both after the same girl, right? Again, it's calling out that ridiculous world that Saved by the Bell created, that's still like living in perpetuity in Bayside. And I think I like that. I found myself as just like, it's not just calling. So yeah, I think the identity politics are playing a big role in this show, but I think they did it in an organic way where it doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, calling out the actual, but they're also doing the smart thing of like calling out the absurdity of the original show, not the identity politics exclusively, but like the actual show.
Well, I'm actually glad you brought up the Brady Bunch movie, because I just realized something. Imagine this Saved by the Bell revival, but you take out Daisy, Aisha, and Devante, right?
Right.
What would you have? You would have them, and then you would have their children, and how delusional and privileged and just up their own asses they are most of the time. That feels closer to the Brady Bunch movie.
Yeah, but I think... So I just think... All right. So maybe this is where your critique of like woke is fair, because I don't think a show like that would sell.
If you don't think so?
No,
I
don't think so.
I actually think I would have liked the now hear me out on this. I think I actually would have liked the revival more, because when you put in Daisy and Aisha and stuff, they're mainly there just to be like, hey, you know, we're aware of what's going on. We're cool. We're hip, right? And like, because also the beats of their quote unquote sincere moments don't hit at all for me. You know, they
right.
feel here to try and like somewhat humanize the characters. But at the end of the day, you know, like I said, the show's busy doing other stuff. Whereas if you purely made it a parody, any commentary that you wanted to say about these characters would just come through in the plot and in the story. But instead we have, so the Brady Bunch lacked a Daisy character, right? Being in the middle of them being like, you guys are stupid. It's the 90s. What are you doing? It's not the 70s anymore. Right. So take that in this new one. And that's what only Daisy's role is. She's literally
the
only
Brady
there
Bunch
to complain.
The Brady Bunch 2 had that.
With Roy,
sequel,
which is why
yeah.
Brady Bunch 2 wasn't as good.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, like that's at the end of the day, I get a little tired of Daisy just being there, like in the middle of all of this. Like, you know, at the end of the day, Mac made me laugh. Lexi made me laugh.
Really?
Jamie Spano, they made me laugh because of how
I think Mac was the only. Yeah, Mac was the only one that did not make me laugh. Everyone else actually did.
Yeah, because it's all just so ludicrous and you get what they're saying with them. But then what is Daisy doing? She's just there like rolling her eyes and being like, this is bullshit. And like that at the end of the day, one, do I need that? But two, it's like, so that's my Latino representation.
Well, I feel like she's more like my Liz Lemon representation, right? She's a straight woman. She is Liz Lemon, for example, was like the straight woman of 30 Rock. This absurd with all these absurd characters, right? And granted, she herself had eccentricities.
Yeah, I think Liz Lemon was more than a straight woman, but
but overall, from like she compared to the entire cast, right? She was probably the most normal, quote unquote normal, and as a result, and it was her story. Same thing here. Daisy is kind of doing that for me here. Granted, not as eccentric as Liz Lemon, although I only have 3 episodes to judge this off of. I think so. For me, it works. You know what? Maybe that's what I'm realizing. This is giving me a little bit of 30 Rock-ness that I wasn't expecting, and it's like I'm okay with it. I am.
You're even okay with the fact that Devante is just like walking around like. As the character who they're actually like speaking about, you know, issues about, like he actually, I don't know anything about Devante. Devante.
Well, we only saw 3
anything.
Episodes.
But like in those 3 episodes, he's just used as an issue
spokesperson. I actually think Devante, his funniest scenes actually came with the text messaging the group. All that running gag of like him leaving the group text was what I thought that was. I think that says a lot about a person. I understood who he was, and I get it. And yeah. And then the next episode, you get the scene where, like, you know, we learned that, he had a troubled past, but, like, he himself is here trying to get a fresh start. And, you know, we learned he has a sick grandma who throws her teeth at the TV when Judge
Judy... That's, like, the only thing I learn about him after, you know, the other characters are like, oh, yeah, no, we get that you want to join the football team. And, like, oh, yeah, no, you probably did steal those laptops since, you know, you were an inner city kid before and all this stuff. And it was, like, he has no real time to defend himself at all. So it's just, like, interesting how he's kind of, like, used as the issue post-trial.
No, 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 but he was only defending himself to Aisha.
Only after she snitched on him.
Right, but like, just before, but the only reason he was defending himself to her was only to make the point. It's just like, yeah, you don't know me. You don't know me, so, you know, back off.
That's actually incredibly true, because I guess from the three episodes, I was like, they're just using him as like, you know, like, okay, he's a black boy, so what are the things that black boys have happened to them? Oh, well, they get stereotyped, they get, you know, people swear that they're underprivileged, like all this shit. And it's,
yeah,
like,
but the stereotyping,
again,
that's
off the boxes.
But that's why I think that episode for me worked, because if the stereotyping, yeah, the school itself was doing stereotyping against all the kids from the poor district, mm-hmm. but the storyline was really focused on Aisha's own, like,
yeah. All right. So I just want to clarify something here. You know, I feel like I'm coming off as someone who's like never going to be happy with representation. But that's also like I said at the beginning of the episode, you know, I really don't know how I feel about this. But I guess what I'm realizing is having my conversation, you know, and I'm also purposely like trying to contradict you because I, you know, you like it, so I'll be the person who doesn't like it because that's
yeah. I will die on that molehill that yeah, this show is not as bad as I thought it was going to be, and I think that is perfectly fine.
And so I guess for me it's more so like as a Latino woman, you know, and I'm gay and all this stuff, and I don't fit the bill as beautiful, you know, for me the representation I get that, oh well, because, you know, I'm androgynous or whatever, you know, I'm whatever, insecurities coming out, but I think about representation, I'm very picky about it. Mm-hmm. And I guess in this case, I did enjoy the show. There were times that made me laugh. It wasn't the worst thing, you know. I liked it better than Punky Brewster. Don't tell Eddie that. But at the end of the day, I feel like I was being used as a way to try and, like, resonate to me when, like, the show was could have, I felt like, almost had more time for the other characters. I was just used as a plot device in order to be like, quote unquote, woke and, uh-huh. you know, to be self-aware to the point where it almost came off as not self-aware. It was like, OK, so what is Daisy just going to do? Complain about how overprivileged these people are?
And well, she's trying to change the system.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's
well.
Trying to break through to the she's trying to break through the Mac.
I wasn't able to, I guess, see past that, at least like her inclusion in the show. So. Part of me just, I guess maybe I'm just so hard and so cynical too that I'm just like, unless it speaks absolutely true to me, I don't accept it.
It could be, and I think that's also perfectly acceptable, right? Mm-hmm. I myself am not someone who is craving representation. Let me rephrase that. Of course I want representation in media that speaks to me, but I mean, like, I'm not actively always just looking for it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I actually am more critical. So I guess I'm usually more critical when it's handled in ways that aren't organic to the story. Mm. And that is why I was more forgiving of this one. More so that let's talk a little bit about last week's Punky Brewster, where uh-huh. she adopted kids who are minorities, right?
Yeah.
Before, you know, the two other kids that she had adopted, right? They're clearly minority. They're different race from her. And there's no explanation. There's nothing that it felt insincere. Like, they felt like just check marks. Like, oh, good. We have, like, our multiracial family. We don't have to explain it, you know? We don't. And that, to me, feels insincere. Here, it's a farce as to how these students ended up in this school. But you know what? They gave me an honest reason why it works in this world that I'm watching. And as it goes for me, like, I'm okay with that. And overall, I myself can relate with Daisy, because in high school, I kind of was sometimes that little bit of an overachiever, yeah. You know?
I see what you're saying. And actually, with Punky Brewster, too, it's like a family show. And they're, like, really trying to, like, accurately address, like, emotions and ideals and stuff, where Saved by the Bell is 100% a farce. It's 100% a parody and a pastiche and all this stuff. So in that case, it is, I guess, more acceptable.
For me, it was. And you know, and I think that's ultimately like, how did you take it? I mean, Freddie, we did this episode for you. So, man, you got to let us know.
Yeah, please hit us back on your thoughts after hearing this episode. But, you know, so now comes the question also because we've been talking for a while. So
we have. Who knew?
Who knew? Well, we had technical difficulties, so maybe it isn't as long as we thought. But
you're going to find out it is.
Was this show, Rolando, in your humble opinion, was it needed?
I'm going to say, shockingly, I think it was needed because I didn't know. All right. Zach Morris is trash as a series, as a YouTube series, does such a wonderful job.
That was needed.
Yeah. But it does a great job of pointing out like how Zach Morris is flawed. But let's say that didn't exist, right? I don't know if the show would exist, though, if that didn't exist. But let's say that they try to do this show without me realizing that Zach Morris is trash or knowing that ahead of time.
Yeah.
I think that this show still would have succeeded because it's kind of doing it's doing a good job of showing you how not just Zach Morris is trash, but like Bayside and this community of people are trash.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think that's kind of why it's needed. I didn't know I needed it, but it turns out I did.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was needed. I think that the show has potential, though. And I am kind of curious as to where it will go. I think that it was trying to say so much, though. And this is just, again, one of those shows that has so many different agendas to it, that it would have benefited from kind of like toning maybe one or two aspects of it down or just eliminating it, period, so that the other aspects of it could have been stronger. And I think that I would have appreciated the show and felt like, oh, yeah, I really needed to watch this show. Or, yeah, like people should watch this show if it wasn't a label that's Saved by the Bell and it wasn't busy trying to, you know, be a Saved by the Bell revival. And also the original Saved by the Bell. All it needed was Zach Morris's trash. You know, that's the only revival it kind of needed. And then
agreed. We
should just leave it alone as what it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, I feel like the show does have some sort of like, you know, redemption goal to it, and I just will not let that show be saved. So that's how I
feel. Well, I think that's fair. I actually think this was a very nice spirited debate that I didn't think we would get into. No, because I think it's shockingly for a show that is just supposed to be like a little sitcom, we only saw three episodes and we're really getting into it in terms of identity politics and woke culture. And I think it's a conversation that a lot of people are having nowadays, especially given our political climate. So I don't know. I think for a show to do that and have this, like, it can generate this very honest conversation. I think it's a good thing, to be honest.
I think so too, for sure.
So,
and content for our podcast is always a good thing.
Of course, it is a good thing. And guys, you can check out all our previous episodes by checking out our website, remakesrebootsrevivals.com. All our old episodes live there. You can also find us on your podcast app. Leave us a rating, guys, please.
Yes, please.
It helps other people find us. And 100%. Where else can people reach out?
Facebook, facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals. Instagram @remakesrebootsrevivals. We're on YouTube and you can watch some of our or listen to some of our videos there. And please, if you feel chatty and want to actually leave us a voicemail, you can do so. 862-248-2326. Once again, if you want to leave your precious little voicemail to us, wait on, precious little voicemail. You want to leave a voicemail to us.
They are precious. We do take them. We treat them preciously.
Yes.
Because we're doing
Instagram
a whole
messages, Gmails, voicemails. We appreciate them all.
Yeah, we're going to do we're answering some of our fan mail and voicemails. So we're very excited to do that in the near future. So keep them coming.
So, yes, that number again, 862-248-2326. Thank you so much, Freddie, for reaching out to everyone else who has reached out, even though we haven't, you know, given you a shout out on the show yet. Keep listening because we will soon. And thank you for reaching out. Please continue to reach out. We really do love hearing from you guys. And until next time,
stay an original.